Greetings to everyone. I think I should say good morning first to all our participants coming from various parts of Asia, and most of all to our speaker, who I will introduce momentarily. Good afternoon to our friends and colleagues here on the West Coast, or good evening elsewhere in the United States. My name is Larry Diamond. I'm a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, and I would like to welcome you to this session of our program, the research program on Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific region. Our event today is going to focus on India-Taiwan ties in an era of Chinese expansionism. It's part of a growing effort on the part of the Hoover Institution to look at the problem and the security issues and the defense of democracy in Taiwan and the challenge posed by China's global expansion and sharp power in the context of a truly Indo-Pacific region, in which I believe there's growing and wide appreciation of the vital role that India plays as a partner for the defense of security, a free and open Indo-Pacific, and our shared democratic values. With that, let me tell you our plan for this hour. We're going to begin by hearing from our speaker, Jagannath Panda, who I'll introduce more fully in a moment. We then will be delighted to have some reactions and remarks from our esteemed colleague, the former ambassador of the United States to India, David Mulford. And then finally, we'll have a Q&A session moderated by my colleague, visiting scholar and manager of the program on Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific region, Karis Templeman. So let me begin by introducing Dr. Jagannath Panda. He is a research fellow at the Manohar Parrikar Institute for Defense Studies and Analyses in New Delhi, sometimes called MPIDSA. There he is in charge of the East Asia Center and oversees the Track 2 and Track 1.5 dialogue with think tanks in China, Taiwan, Japan, and Korea. He is the series editor for a very influential Routledge series called Studies on Think Asia. He's the author of India-China Relations, Politics of Resources, Identity, and Authority in a Multipolar World, and of China's Path to Power, Party, Military, and the Politics of State Transition. Crucially, for our purposes, he edited a book a few years ago with Pentagon Press called India-Taiwan Relations in Asia and Beyond. And more recently, he is co-editor of the just-released last year volume, Chinese Politics and Foreign Policy Under Xi Jinping, The Future Political Trajectory. He's published in, well, it seems almost every relevant journal that is concerned with these issues. And he is a figure that is widely consulted and read for his expertise on this crucial angle of Asian security and reconceptualizing how we think about the Indo-Pacific region. So I'd like to begin now by giving the floor to our colleague, Dr. Panda.
Good morning. Thank you, Professor Larry Diamond, for that kind introduction. It's lovely to be here on this platform in Hoover. I must mention at the outset that I can't probably ask for a better venue than this, where Ambassador Mulford is present. And I must mention that given his tall contribution to India-US relations. Probably, you know, this is a fitting platform for me to share some of his thoughts and welcome him to comments on my thoughts. And also, it's a great pleasure to have Caris Templeton, who is also a well-known scholar on Taiwan affairs, and my pleasure to be here. Thank you very much to the Hoover Institute for this talk. One of the striking elements about this talk of mine is that I'm actually speaking in front of an informed audience who is actually well-versed about Taiwan. And particularly, Professor Larry Diamond, whom I have personally read during my, university days to my think tank life, last 15 years of my think tank life here. And I have great appreciation for his works on democracy. And democracy has been actually the defining and the binding element in India-Taiwan relationship. And therefore, I will start this talk by saying that, the idea here is to share some of my thoughts, whoever is listening, either in Taiwan or in India, in United States, in China, or wherever you are. The views expressed in this talk are purely mine, mostly from a scholarly point of view, to generate discussion, to contribute to the studies of India-Taiwan relationship. The intent is not to hurt anybody's intention or to, try to, mollify any entities, any organizations or institutions here. All the views expressed here belongs to me. It doesn't really belongs to my institute. And it is only for the betterment of the discussion and academic purpose. Now, if you could see from the slide, let me start by saying that I've actually put in front of you few basic questions. And these are actually very basic and fundamental questions, but yet these are very critical questions in the context of the regions, in the context of India-Taiwan ties, in the context of the evolving dynamics with Taiwan, that mainland China and both mainland China and many other countries, including India, is having. So therefore, I think we should start by asking that fundamental questions that what is the current status of India-Taiwan ties at this moment? And I think I have already mentioned about this in my writings in different forum, and particularly in my book, which was released in 2016, that India-Taiwan ties, we haven't really studied this, the dynamics of this relationship much. And this relationship is actually understudied, underdebated, and we have not really tried to have much in-depth discussion about India-Taiwan ties in the context of the regions, in the context of India-China ties, in the context of China's relationship with Taiwan. So therefore, I would say that if I have to just make a very plain, simple assessment of this at this moment, I would say it's a very low-profile relationship. And this relationship lacks confidence. But what is really interesting about this relationship is that even though it lacks confidence, even though it is a very low profile relationship, gradually the way the regional dynamics is emerging and the way we are facing the heat from mainland China, I think the relationship between India and Taiwan is getting matured. So it is a relationship which is still evolving, which is getting matured. And getting mature day by day with the involvement of various issues in the regions, particularly given the future dynamics that is actually emerging in context of the 100 years of centenary celebration of the Chinese Communist Party that is due this year in July. And I think in that context, India-Taiwan relationship is maturing and evolving very fast. Now, what is the formal status of this India-Taiwan relationship? To put put it very simply, I mean, we can interpret it in either way. We can say it that it's a very much of unofficial relationship, like many of the relationship in world politics, many countries shares with Taiwan. So therefore, India-Taiwan relationship equally can be considered termed as a unofficial relation. But I would like to call it very much an official relationship without any diplomatic credence. And why do I call it an official relationship without any diplomatic credence? Of course, we do understand that most of the countries in the world, most of the major powers, smaller powers, except 15 odd countries who have diplomatic ties with Taiwan, non-major powers, no major country in the world are having diplomatic credence with Taiwan. But again, if we try to see the volume of India-Taiwan relationship, the way the relationship is actually evolving and stays at this moment, it is very much a official relationship. In fact, the passing year, year 2020, it marked the 25th anniversary of the establishment of India-Taipei Association in Taipei and the Taipei Economic Cultural Center, TECC, in New Delhi. In fact, in a way, that was the beginning of a kind of a official relationship. So it's been 25 years. We are trying to give a official credence to this relationship. And today, I think we have arrived at a stage to evaluate what's really lacking in this relationship. And in fact, almost a decade back, 2012, the Taipei Economic Cultural Center in New Delhi had opened its branches in other parts of India. And we had a branch office in Chennai in 2012. Now we have also branch office in Kolkata and in Mumbai. Kolkata, which is in the eastern part of India, and Mumbai, which is in the southern part of India. So therefore, Taiwan very much exists in the official capacity to engage with India, so much so that the relationship can be called as a kind of official relationship. Now, I'll take that point from the beginning, that if we try to evaluate from a holistic point of view, what really binds the India-Taiwan relationship at this moment is actually their shared commitment to democracy, to their shared commitment to pluralism, and the shared commitment to rule of law. Even though we don't have actually many platforms, many official religions between India and Taiwan, but whenever there are officials speaking from both the sides, whenever there are representatives speaking from both the sides, and most of these officials are actually called representatives primarily on the Taiwan side. So whenever we have actually talked about this, there is a stress on protecting and committing to democracy, pluralism, and rule of law. And I think this has been the binding forces behind India and Taiwan relationship as much as it is in other relationships. And if we try to also see in terms of quantity, in terms of in a practical and contextual context, I think the bilateral trade is also growing, though it is not really very impressive. The bilateral trade ties between India and Taiwan is only 7.2 billion US dollar, which is, I'm quoting this figure by 2019, by the end of 2019. And the bilateral trade is around 1% of the total trade of both the sides. It's 1% for India's total trade and 1% of Taiwan's total trade. But what is really impressive about this trade ties, if we try to compare it with India's trade ties with Japan, which is a big economy, India's trade ties with South Korea, which is another top GDP ranked economy. India's trade figure with Taiwan is not actually very small. India's trade ties with Japan and India's trade ties with South Korea is roughly around 15 to 17 billion US dollar, which is now crossing the 20 billion US dollar. Particularly on the Japanese front, we are doing well. But in comparison to these two economic trade engagement of India, Japan, and India, South Korea, India-Taiwan trade ties is actually getting impressive. So therefore, this is one of these relationships which is continuously evolving. And currently around 140 Taiwanese companies are operating in India. And also equally an impressive number of Indian companies are showing an interest to go to Taiwan and engage in business operations. If we try to say the investment by Taiwanese firms in India, that has actually reached around 375 million by the end of, 2019. In 2018, actually, the bilateral investment agreement has been upgraded, that has been updated. And the key component of this bilateral investment agreement is areas like agriculture, invest, heritage, railway, civil aviation, industrial cooperation, small and medium enterprises. So all of these are essential components of India-Taiwan relationship. And interestingly, what really today have been the bridge between India-Taiwan is the flight connections, the civil aviation cooperation, the flight cooperation. In fact, the direct flight between India and Taiwan was introduced way back in 2003. And in 2016, the air services agreement was signed between both the sides. And as per that agreement, today we are having 14 flights operating between India and Taiwan from both the sides. And that is actually a very significant number in context of where Taiwan is related and in context of the diplomatic constraint that India is having with Taiwan. And also what is interesting is that there is also a dynamics attached to it. Of course, these are direct flights operating between India and Taiwan, and there are indirect flights. But interestingly, when a government official or myself from a public think tank, from a government institutions, when we travel to Taiwan, we cannot take a direct flight to Taiwan. We have to travel to a third party or through an indirect flight. And I think that is a kind of a dynamics which needs to be understood in the context of India-Taiwan relationship, because India is too cautious about taking a blunt position on China on Taiwan, and India is very possessive about its one China policy, which is of course slightly changing in the current context, particularly if we try to understand India's evolving dynamics with China. So what my second point here would be that what are the fault lines of India-Taiwan ties then? And I think this is a critical question which will help us to understand the dynamics of this relationship and the future undercurrents in context of both bilateral and regional context, particularly trying to position India-Taiwan relationship in the context of Indo-Pacific dynamics. Now, what are the fault lines of India-Taiwan ties? I think there are primarily, if we try to assess this relationship, there are two fault lines. One kind of fault lines which are very closely linked with the historical perceptions. And I think that's the key here, not only in India-Taiwan relations, but with many countries, including US-Taiwan ties. So historical perception is one of those historical elements, historical undercurrents and perceptions are one critical barrier in India-Taiwan relationship, and that needs to be overcome in the future context. The second one is the geopolitical context, which I'll be speaking about. But let me first talk about the historical episodes or the historical context. I think it goes back to 1940s, when actually the founder of Taiwan, Chiang Kai-shek, the head of the nationalist government, founding father of Taiwan, or we can say the founding head of the KMT, he visited India in 1942. And that was a beginning of the India-Taiwan exclusive relationship in some ways. Of course, Chiang Kai-shek would go in history because he supported India, India's freedom struggle that time. So India holds a very good high opinion about Chiang Kai-shek historically. Perceptual gap primarily between India and Taiwan is actually the way Nehru and Chou Enlai, Prime Minister Nehru and Mao Zedong, they actually started having a personal chemistry between them before the India-China war was actually, happened, and before the boundary dispute, including the Dalai Lama issue, became the flashpoint in India-China relationship. And I think what happened is that Nehru's trip to mainland China in 1939 was a kind of a defining moment in terms of building a relationship with communist China. And I think in that context, the first Indian Prime Minister, Pandit Nehru, was a very open-minded, liberal, thinker and statesman. He was actually having a pro-engagement policy towards communist China. And immediately after that, what we saw at the beginning of the 1950s, in fact, after the establishment of the PRC and the independence of India in 1948-49, after the establishment of the Republic of India, both the leaders actually talked about, including Chou Enlai, they talked about the five principles of peaceful coexistence, one cell agreement. And I think that was the element which actually created a perceptual gap and political distance between India and Taiwan. And the second key historical element which has actually created this gap between India and Taiwan was 1971. Where India, like many other countries, supported People's Republic of China's permanent membership in United Nations Security Council. And I think, Ambassador Mulford may have some views about it. I think that was a significant error, not only on part of India, but also I think on many parts of the many major countries in the world. Whether it was an error or not an error, that's again a debatable issue. But in the current context of Taiwan, definitely one would like to read it is some kind of a political misjudgment or a kind of a political error to some extent. I think the second fault line that has actually created a gap between India and Taiwan is Taiwan's problematic position and stance on the India-China boundary dispute per se. And I think that is a critical element, and that has not really been spoken widely. That has not really been spoken neither so much by the Indian, strategic thinkers and communities, nor by the strategic communities in Taiwan. And I think there a lack of reciprocity from the Taiwanese side on India-China boundary dispute, supporting India, and India not having a, more open, frank discussion with China, with Taiwan on India-China boundary dispute is one critical factor. And let me point it out here that, Chiang Kai-shek never ever acknowledged the McMahon line. And I think that was one of the critical element that has actually been one of the most defining element in India-Taiwan ties. Today, if we see Taiwan's official position, that's also equally problematic. Taiwan's official present territorial claims exceeds that the claim of the PRC. And I think that is one of the most important aspects that Taiwan needs to correct. And India needs to convince Taiwan needs to correct. For example, we don't know, and Taiwan's official territorial claim on Arunachal Pradesh, on Aksai Chin, on parts of the Pakistan-occupied Kashmir, including Mongolia, is still a problematic aspect when it comes to the map of what is actually China. And some of these maps, official maps of Taiwan, are actually belongs to the Kempt regimes or the Chiang Kai-shek government. And I think that is one of the critical elements that has been a barrier between India and Taiwan. In fact, even during the 1962 war, Taiwan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs stated that it did not ever acknowledge the McMull Line. And I think that was one of those defining elements. In 1987, when India actually elevated the status of Arunachal Pradesh as a sovereign state, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Taiwan declared it null and void, stating that it did not recognize the illegal occupation of Republic of China's territory south of the McMull Line and the establishment of the Arunachal Pradesh state, which is an illegal act of India. And I think this has been a critical barrier in India-Taiwan ties. And therefore, not many strategic thinkers, including officials, have actually drawn confidence on Taiwan's position when it comes to China. Now, I think another defining moment was, I think, in 1995, when the first representative of Taiwan came to India and the office was established. And since that time, there seems to be a certain change in position in Taiwan's, but we are yet to see a publicly articulated or an officially released clear-cut position from Taiwan on India-China boundary dispute. And I think if we try to connect the dots, I think there is a nuanced change has happened in Taiwan's perception towards India-China boundary dispute, but it's still evolving. If we take into account President Lee Thong Wei's tenure from 88 to 2000, Taiwan talked about pragmatic diplomacy, and Taiwan actually talked about greater space for Taiwan in international affairs. And so there was for the first time what we saw, President Lee Thong Wei brought a kind of original identity to Taiwan in international affairs. And therefore, many in India expected that probably Taiwan will revisit its position on India-China boundary dispute. During President Chen Shui-bian's tenure, we saw, which is between 2000 to 2008, that Taiwan actually trying to show some kind of corrections towards its approach on the India-China boundary dispute. President Ma came to this. Of course, he never spoke about India-China boundary dispute. But Ma Yu-chung talking about greater diplomacy and for a better space for Taiwan in international affairs, and Ma Yu-chung trying to have a greater meaningful participation for Taiwan in UN and many international affairs, actually gave some kind of confidence in Indian strategic community that Taiwan is revisiting its own historical approach towards many of the conflicts between India and China. And hopefully Taiwan would take a clear position on the boundary dispute between India and China in future. Interestingly, I think since DPP has come to power, there is a subtle change one could notice. In fact, President Tsai Ing-wen, when she was addressing the 109th National Day celebrations, he mentioned about India-China boundary dispute along with South China Sea, East China Sea disputes. So there is a evolution in Taiwanese thinking about India-China boundary dispute. But that evolution is taking place very slowly and probably rightfully so. But again, it's not clearly yet articulated what really Taiwan's stand is all about when it comes to the boundary dispute between India and China. And KMT has never taken an explicit position on India-China boundary dispute. And more interestingly, if we take into reference the two recent conflicts, that is the Doklam conflict between India and China involving Bhutan, which happened in 2017, and the current one, which is still not finished, that is the Galwan border incident, which happened last year. Taiwan has never given a public statement about the dispute. And all of these things actually come as a barrier to India-Taiwan ties. The third barrier in India-Taiwan ties is actually India's China policy, which has actually not helped Taiwan to draw much confidence on India. And I think here, I think India has equally committed some strategic errors or strategic miscalculations, one if one could call it, vis-a-vis China. And I think I will not really go too far into the history, but I'll just very briefly mention that at the beginning of the 21st century, when everybody was talking about China's rise, when you know it is the year and period 2003 and 2004, when President Hu Jintao came to power and there was a massive military budget, was accorded in China's military modernization plan. China's GDP growth went double figure. China's defense budget, military budget went double figure. That is the time when many countries were actually talking about China rights and China emerging as a threat. On the other hand, India did acknowledge China's rights positively. And that time, even though India was very concerned and mindful about China's rights as a military concern. In fact, prior to that, in 1998-99, we went for the nuclear test and keeping the China threat in mind. But again, over the next 10 years or so, there was a positive orientation was seen in India's engagement towards China, in India's policy towards China. And India started seeing China in a context of Asia as a partner. And if we see the press release and joint statement between India and China, that time a number of meetings happened between late Prime Minister Vajpayee and the Chinese leaders. And then the next Prime Minister, Prime Minister Manmohan Singh, who came to power in 2004, and the Chinese leadership, Hu Jintao and Wen Jiabao. So that is the period India-China relationship started again, becoming very close to normal, real normal. And then it started, having cooperation in the multilateral arenas. And that is the period, if you remember, in 2007 and 8, we started talking about BRICS. Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Of course, South Africa joined later in 2011. But that is the period when India, China started talking about climate nexus under the basic formulation, South Africa, India, China nexus, then BRICS formulations. All of this multilateral nexus started happening and India, China started taking a lead as emerging economy. And in 2014, actually, we started talking about developmental partnership between India and China. And all of this engagement process did not really encourage Taiwan to draw optimism about India. So this has been one of the flip side of India-Taiwan ties. India's more proactive engagement with China all these years, particularly, when the current government came to power in 2014, Prime Minister Modi, he actually saw China as a kind of a partner to some extent. So therefore, Taiwan never draw any kind of confidence out of this. So I'll just try to wrap up in next 3 to 4 minutes by touching upon my last few points. And I think another fault line of India-Taiwan relationship is that this is an ambitious relationship. Yet it does not really take practicality into consideration. And I think both the sides wants to expand the network of this engagement between India and Taiwan, but they don't really take the practicality into consideration that there are areas where there could be real-time cooperation, but there are areas where there cannot be a real-time cooperation. And I think we need to really become practical in terms of talking about India-Taiwan ties. What is the future of India-Taiwan ties in terms of Indo-Pacific context? And I think this is one of the last point that I would like to touch upon in 2 minutes. One is that I think as far as India is concerned, India does see Taiwan as a separate autonomous geographical region. Even though we would not really like to see or call Taiwan as an independent geographical entity, but definitely we do see it as a separate autonomous geographical entity. And I think that should be appreciated in Taiwan's strategic and official circle. And India would like to back for a meaningful participation of Taiwan in international frameworks, in international agencies, in international multilateral forums. And I think the previous US administration talked about Taiwan, that is the Taipei Act, Taiwan Alliance International Protection and Enhancements Initiatives. India would like to support that act to, in some ways or the other. But I think if we need to really take this relationship forward in the context of India-Taiwan ties in Indo-Pacific, we need to talk about how to integrate Taiwan into the regional and global supply chain networks. And I think that is one of the important aspects. We need to draw a bridge between Taiwan's new southbound policy and India's Arctic policy, or let's say Indo-Pacific policy. And we need to talk about areas of cooperation like trade, tourism, education, agricultural cooperation, medicine, public health, youth exchange, and all of this can be both between India and Taiwan directly. And this can be also thought out in terms of regional supply chain or global supply chain. And Taiwan can be an integral part of the newly proposed India-Japan-Australia trilateral supply chain. The two other points is that I think the more important thing in the context of India-Taiwan relationship is that we need to think about a middle power framework, a multilateral framework in Indo-Pacific. Of course, we need to have a more purposeful partnership from the US and backing from the US in this context. But I think there is a middle power dynamics emerging in Indo-Pacific, and Taiwan should be an integral part to this middle power framework. There are institutions and mechanisms where Taiwan can be a part of these mechanisms. For example, AIIB. India is the second largest voting holder of the AIIB. Of course, Taiwan applied for the AIIB membership and it was discarded, rejected by mainland China. But there is still a scope for Taiwan to come to AIIB, and we can discuss about that. And I think there could be a political consensus about Taiwan's entry to AIIB, probably on the APEC model or something very close to like the way Taiwan is associated with Asian Development Bank. Maybe Taiwan can be a part of the Quad Plus framework that is emerging in the post-pandemic period, Democratic 10 Alliance, Five Eyes formulations. These are the critical areas where Taiwan can be a part of this greater nexus, including, in fact, I don't really say that there is a formulation of Asian NATO or Indo-Pacific NATO is going to happen immediately. But if we are actually talking about Taiwan security, the security of Indo-Pacific regions, we could actually talk about a greater multilateral nexus emerging in the Indo-Pacific regions, and Taiwan can be a part of that process. I'll stop here and welcome your comments and questions. Thank you.
Jagannath, thank you so much for that. It's now my pleasure to introduce our distinguished visiting fellow at the Hoover Institution, Ambassador David Mulford. I think most of you know that Ambassador Mulford has had a distinguished career in international finance, both in the public and private sector. He was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury and then Undersecretary from 1984 to 1992, and then our Ambassador to India for 5 years from 2004 to 2009. I would just like to say that I think there's probably a fairly large consensus that no American ambassador to India, and that includes illustrious figures like Chester Bowles and Daniel Patrick Moynihan, has achieved more in terms of concretely elevating the U.S.-India relationship than Ambassador Mulford did in those transformative 5 years. So, David, we welcome your comments.
Larry, thank you so much for your very generous comments. I very much value my friendship and relationship with you because you are an extremely realistic thinker about things, and that's always appealing to me. And I am also very grateful to our speaker today because he has exposed in a very short period of time the obscurity, really, of the India-Taiwan relationship compared to what I think it must become. So I was fascinated by the historical record that he offered, the gradual, very gradual, sometimes not even visibly gradual, evolution of a relationship between Taiwan and India. But affairs in Asia generally, and in the Indo-Pacific now, are forcing these very issues rather quickly, in my view. And that is a very good thing and a necessary thing. The other point I would make is that, and I'm not being humorous here, I think it's beneficial that there isn't much widely known knowledge about India-Taiwan relationships, because it'll be useful not to have a history there, because it will allow more creative/radical thinking about how we address this new reality as China visibly and rather quickly becomes more threatening. The United States' relationship with India is very, very important. And I would go so far as to say that the United States' relationship with India in the next 30 or 40 years is probably going to be the most important geopolitical relationship the United States has, depending upon what goes on in the area. But I am not making any assumptions that China is moving in a direction of greater cooperation, friendliness, etc. I visualize future problems, and perhaps rather soon, and maybe rather suddenly. What I was struck by in the description of Taiwan was how similar the position is in Bhutan, where once again, just south of Tibet, and very sensitive about being invaded, frankly, by China, they have chosen to have no relations, diplomatic relations, although there are indeed official or nearly official relationships with the United States and a variety of other European countries. And that is a country which is small, doesn't have anything like the power of Taiwan. But it's interesting to me that China has these two examples on either side of it. And when it comes to border disputes and when it comes to water and electric power and things like that, Bhutan, of course, is very, very close to India and is much affected by what happens in the future. I think that I don't feel well enough informed to really speculate on what's going to happen in the future and when and how. But I just have the feeling that the future is going to be very different. And it will be a future which possibly begins to emerge rather suddenly in some way or another in some place, whether it's with the United States, whether it's with Japan, whether it's with Taiwan, whether it's with the border situation with India, because it's hard to see how things can just stay the same and hard to see how there could be the kind of reasonable evolution of a relationship that would have characterized diplomatic developments in other parts of the world these last, say, 15 or 20 years. It just seems to me that there is a fragility, a brittleness around these areas that might be, well, stressed or strained or even fragmented in a rather short period of time, given the very aggressive behavior of China. So, and of course, we don't yet know what the new administration in Washington really is going to unfold with regard to China. It may unfold such a soft position that things will calm down and the evolution of affairs will be a kind of a subterfuge, but maybe not. And China has overstepped the mark in many ways. And one of the ways that I think is important for India is that India is beginning, I think, to see that the relationship visualized with China based on China becoming more like us is not happening. And I look for a very different development. And if India is involved in more problems with the borders, they're likely to become harsher. And one can understand why. And that's, of course, not predictable, but it does seem to be gradually happening, unless it reverses and settles down for some reason. So I'll terminate there, but I just want once again to emphasize my gratitude for the comments that were made today and to be exposed to a relationship which, even though I was ambassador, wasn't very visible compared, say, to Bhutan or Pakistan or Singapore or Malaysia or anything. I mean, it's quite remarkable, but it is true that it is coming into focus. And one area that was mentioned by our speaker, which I want to emphasize, partly because of my financial background and my years in the Treasury, when I was forced, because of the great strength of the Taiwanese economy and their trade surplus with the United States, to try to address the so-called Asian tigers and their too weak, we thought, exchange rates, given the competitiveness they had generated at that time. This was many, many years ago now. But the moral of that story is that the common interest and capacities of India and Taiwan in being the leaders in the world in supply chain relocation with Europe and with the United States is really a major area of development and ought to be between them a major area of sharing and cooperating to become the supply chain really optional masters, because supply chains are changing and they're going to have to change more. So I'll stop there. Thanks very much.
Thank you, David, for those extremely interesting and perceptive remarks. Since you closed with supply chains, which I also caught my attention as a major current imperative and opportunity, Jagannath, before we get to our audience and their wide array of questions, maybe I'll give you an opportunity briefly to reply to anything that Ambassador Mulford has raised, but also perhaps expand a bit on the last point about the potential for collaboration and further development in terms of substituting for some of our global dependence on PRC, centrality in supply chains, and you know, what are the most promising areas in which India and Taiwan could help, say, the Western world or much of the global economy diversify their dependence on supply chains in mainland China?
Well, thank you very much for those useful comments, Ambassador Mulford. I broadly agree with most of your expressed comments, and I think more practicalities should be drawn in India-Taiwan relationship, and we should not really revisit too much into the history. And that's the point I would like to take from your comments. But on the supply chain networks or the resilience initiatives that we are talking about, and I think Taiwan can be one of those fulcrum of this global and regional supply chain networks in a number of areas: trade, tourism, education, medical and the health, health sectors. Energy could be one of those areas. And there is a lot of talk currently about science and technology and semiconductor. And I think that is one of those critical areas where actually Taiwan can be ingrained more into the regional and global supply chain networks. Essentially, Taiwan is already a critical link in high-tech supply chains. And I think that needs to be factored when we are talking about enhancing factoring Taiwan as the middle of this supply chain networks or nexus. And I think the semiconductor industry, particularly so far, has remained in Taiwan, and it has not migrated to mainland China. And that's the advantage. And I think all of the supply chain resilience initiatives that India, Japan, and Australia are talking about, they can actually factor some of these elements involving Taiwan. And that will be critical about the future of the supply chain networks in the region.
Okay, Karis, help us by sharing some of the other questions and comments.
Yeah.
And just say to our audience that if you have a question, please just briefly type it out in the Q&A box.
Yeah, and in the interest of time, I'm going to combine several of these questions and just pose a couple directly to you. It'll be kind of a merging of several of these. Also, I just wanted to thank Jagannath for getting up so early. I don't know if our audience is aware that we've just passed 6 a.m. New Delhi time. So he was far more lucid than I would have ever been at that time of the morning. So I congratulate you on an excellent set of remarks.
Thank you.
At such an ungodly hour of the day. So the questions, we've had some questions in the chat box, and I'll combine them with a couple that I had myself. The first is just thinking about the India-Taiwan relationship and its connection to the India-China relationship. And so in the U.S., there's a lot of support for Taiwan right now in Congress and in the broader kind of foreign policy community. But a lot of that support is actually kind of a reaction to worsening U.S.-China relations. And this is a longstanding pattern in U.S.-Taiwan relations. When the U.S. doesn't like China, they like Taiwan. When they do like China, they forget about Taiwan. And so I'm wondering if there's a similar kind of dynamic in the India-China relationship right now. And so related to that, is this current kind of rise in interest in deepening India-Taiwan ties, is that just a temporary effect, or do you think this is going to be more permanent, more long-lasting, and we'll see a kind of a long-term trend to deepen? Related to that, if there is a long-term kind of deepening between Taiwan and India, obviously they don't have official diplomatic relations, but you noted that the rest of their relationship is actually quite developed now. And I wondered, in what specific areas, what domains would we be most likely to see real progress in the next few years? So let me just throw out civil society, for instance. You mentioned both India and Taiwan are democracies. They have this kind of shared commitment to pluralism and the rule of law, whether you would see a similar kind of some growth in civil society interactions, education, We've already mentioned work on technology and supply chains. Also, I wondered about cooperation on human rights, perhaps dealing with refugees or in particular the Hong Kong issue, if there are refugees or migrants coming out of Hong Kong, whether there might be a cooperation between Taiwan and India on those. So that's a fair amount for you to tackle right there. So let me leave that with you. Let me also say, we'll go a little long on this since we can probably go till about 5:10 before we wrap up here. So go ahead, the floor is yours, Jagannath.
Thank you, Kais. Those are wonderful comments and questions. Let me address the second question first that you talked about. What are the specific areas where India and Taiwan possibly could cooperate or could stress about enhancing this cooperation? And I think human rights Hong Kong issues or human rights or issues that are very closely linked with civil society networks, I'm not really very sure about these areas. And primarily because I think there is a political conservatism in New Delhi about these issues. And this is, again, for a particular fact, if we visit to the history. India has faced this problem with China going for a war because of the Dalai Lama issues and Tibetan issues. And if you see and take a lessons and draw a lessons out of that, whenever there has been a Tibetan protest in Delhi or anywhere in India, India has been quite mindful and cautious in handling the issue, not allowing it to have a free-flowing a movement or a protest movement in India, highlighting that what the Chinese are actually doing. So India would be really cautious and very conservative in its approach when it comes to human rights and all of this civil society activism kind of issues. But I think what India would like, and also I think there is a reciprocation from the Taiwanese side. And I think there are three critical areas where India-Taiwan relationship would focus and there is a increasing trend to focus on these three areas. One is the educational linkages. And I think that is one of the critical area for Taiwan, because Taiwan wants to raise its own identity as a separate entity, as a separate region in world geography. And education is one of the best medium. The more you train Indian students learning Chinese language or, understanding the China-Taiwan complexities or realizing that Taiwan exists as a separate region, that's to the benefits of Taiwan. And therefore, India also, given its problematic ties with China, we are showing a lot of engagement in terms of academic networks, think tank networks, knowledge community networks with Taiwan. And I think this is one area where both the countries are actually shortlisting each other to cooperate a lot. And one will see a significant increasing trend in this area. The second area is, I think, science and technology, including the semiconductor, is one of those areas. And I think when it comes to the science and technology, I think there is a lot of discussion has happened both at the official and at the unofficial level between India and Taiwan, how to take it forward. And one critical area is cybersecurity. And I think cybersecurity is becoming one critical element of cooperation between India and Taiwan. And that is one area where both the countries would actually like to capitalize on, including on the science and technology and on semiconductor and other issues. Probably on the energy sectors, you will see a lot of focus happening between India and Taiwan. Yeah. The third element is partly bilateral, partly regional. That is the investment pattern, the trade and economic cooperation, factoring agriculture, factoring infrastructure, factoring connectivity issues. Taiwan is actually showing a lot of interest in investing in India. And India wants to tap that opportunity. And the more we are trying to decouple from China or showing a kind of opposition to the Chinese investment in India after the Galwan incident, the more we'll move towards Taiwan. And I think in this particular area, one will see India-Taiwan cooperating a lot. The other question was about US-China dynamics and probably US current approach to Taiwan is a reaction of US-China relationship. I do agree with that. And I think many in India are of the realization that probably the recent reactions towards China and US policy approach increasing and positive policy approach towards Taiwan is very closely linked with US-China dynamics. Similarly is the case with India-China dynamics. And that's why in most part of my talk, I did stress on India-China dynamics, India-China historical episode, because that is closely linked with Taiwan episode. But talking about the present and the future, I would say that I think this relationship will expand in some specific areas, as we discussed in the previous question, in science and technology, in economic cooperation, in educational cooperation. But India-Taiwan relationship will always be a low-profile relationship, low-engagement relationship. Of course, India's current tensions with China is one of those biggest motivator for India-Taiwan relationship at this moment. But India, like many other countries in the world, will always be very cautious about, going ahead openly or overtly with Taiwan on many issues. And therefore, I would say neither it's completely a temporary phenomena, nor it's completely a permanent phenomena. The India-Taiwan relationship will capitalize on some select areas, but politically, it will be a low-profile relationship. Lot will depend on how US is reacting to the issue. Lot will depend how other regional countries are reacting towards Taiwan. And India would draw inferences and strength from there.
Excellent. So let me ask a follow-up question. I was struck, and I noticed that several people in the audience were also struck by your comments about what's effectively the Republic of China on Taiwan's old position on territorial claims that include some land features that India now also has claims to. And it's striking in part because those are so old and they're seemingly irrelevant to Taiwan's position today. And yet they're kind of a vestige, almost like a vestigial organ, one might say, of Taiwan's claim to this Republic of China legacy. And so let me pose a hypothetical question. If the Tsai Ing-wen administration were to formally abandon some of the ROC territorial claims that overlap with India's claims, would they be able to reap any benefits in the India-Taiwan relationship? And I would note that a move like that would actually be quite costly to the Taiwan government because Beijing would object. That would be seen as backing further and further away from an acknowledgement of Taiwan as part of China and as still representing the Republic of China. It would be seen as a move towards independence, in other words. So basically, is it... Can you see a way in which Tsai Ing-wen would pay this cost in order to reap a real benefit in the India-Taiwan relationship?
This is the most interesting question and probably the defining question that many think tankers elsewhere in the world or in India-Taiwan should study very closely. And I think I have my view, spending 1.5 decades in this public think tank in India, which is a government think tank, IDS is a government think tank. I have my own inferences about it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether Ambassador Mulford would agree and Professor Diamond would agree with my analysis or not. I have very specific and probably you might find it interesting. An assessment that I think a lot has been written that it is the US position on Taiwan, which is actually going to be the critical to Taiwan's future. That's true. I'm not really denying for that moment that the Taiwan security is heavily dependent on to what extent US can provide security, in consultation with the regional allies like Japan or Australia. But I think there is a different context to this, and this is very closely linked with these questions, that subject to if Taiwan or the DPP, or let's say hypothetically the KMT, revisits their position on India-China boundary dispute, and Taiwan takes an open position in supporting India and India's territorial claims when it comes to India-China boundary dispute, I think possibly we'll see another war, not between or China going or forcefully going to occupy Taiwan, possibly we'll see a war between India and China. And that might be a defining moment in the history of India-China, in the history of India-Taiwan, in the history of world politics, primarily because it is probably not the US will be the first country to revisit the one China policy. I think any country who would like to revisit one China principle or one China policy, it would be India. And why is that? And I think if Taiwan can revisit its position on India-China boundary dispute, there will be triggered tensions between India and China. And if you see, India has already fine-tuned its position towards China in the context that India's position with China is becoming more confrontationist. We are revisiting. In fact, in our joint statement, since 2008 and 9, we have not mentioned about one China principle or one China policy. That has been deliberately been kept, you know, separate from mentioning in the joint statement. And India will be the first country probably in the history to acknowledge Taiwan if the India-China relationship really deteriorates. Again, all these are hypothetical scenarios. These are futuristic scenarios. And it might actually define the future of the world politics. And probably I am reading too much. But if Taiwan can revisit its position on some of the India's claims vis-a-vis China, that can be a defining moment in world politics, not only about the future of Taiwan, but also about the future of having Taiwan as a different, separate, and possibly an independent country.
Intriguing. Okay. David or Larry, would you like to weigh in here or ask any follow-up questions? You're on
mute. To my mind, the obvious biggest question, which looms large, I think it must, I'm not in the room, but I think it must loom larger and larger as the four Quad countries, including India and the US, deepen their strategic dialogue, let's put it that way. Is one of the two ultimate nightmares of this triangle, which is or quadrangle, which you mentioned one, which is a war between India and China. The other is Chinese invasion and conquest of Taiwan. And unfortunately, I think this is military action by the People's Republic of China to, in their mind, finally solve, to forcibly impose a solution on the status of Taiwan is, I think, an option that is becoming, if I can choose these words carefully, less and less unthinkable in the minds of the Beijing leaders in the coming decade. And I think it would be an existential moment for America's commitment to free and open Indo-Pacific, for American credibility in Asia and the world, and for all of the issues you have posed with respect to how India will position itself. So I don't know if you want to process, I'm not saying that probability, but I'd say growing possibility in light of the other things you've said before we close.
All right. David, any last remarks?
Briefly, I agree with Larry, but I just want to make one point about the Quad countries and Taiwan. We need bear in mind that India is different from all the other Quad countries because it has a common border with China. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it has, in a way, less diplomatic tolerance because it's a question of survivability, as India has known itself. So it makes that, you know, a somewhat more profound issue, if you want to say it that way. But likewise, Taiwan also, I mean, I wouldn't want to say common border because I don't suppose there really is one, but there is a level of concern in Taiwan that would be similar in terms of its continued survivability of the threat posed by China directly to Taiwan. So in a way, India and Taiwan have similar reasons for a more intensive concern about these things. And that ought to bring them together more quickly and more effectively, because they have real survivability questions that are really not quite the same as Japan, Australia, and so on. And I think that that ought to be an incentive for the two countries to be closer together. And also, they have a lot of similarities. I mean, technology, creativity, risk-taking, and so on. I mean, they're both very successful economies.
All right. Wonderful. Well, thank you for those remarks. We're now at 5:10, so let me just wrap up the formal talk here and thank once again our distinguished guest and speaker today, Jagannath Panda, for coming to us from New Delhi very early in the morning. Once again, this has been the Hoover Project on Taiwan in the Indo-Pacific. I'm Caris Templeman. We've had with us Larry Diamond, senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, and Ambassador David Mulford, former ambassador to India, also now at the Hoover Institution. Please join us again for our next event, which will be next month. We will get that announcement out soon. And thanks everyone again for joining us on this late afternoon here in Stanford, California. With that, we'll wrap up.
Thank you very much. Yeah.